I'm your host, John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ 560. Thanks for joining us on this fine Thursday. Dr. Kelly Victory with us, as she is typically on Thursdays at this time. Dr. Kelly, welcome.
Hey, how are you, John?
Are you still driving or are you stationary?
I am stationary. I'm back in the great state of Colorado.
Nice.
After a brief interlude in the crazy land of California.
What are gas prices like out there, by the way?
Oh, my Lord. It is unbelievable. You just stop paying attention after a while. You just shove your credit card in the slot and say, I'll deal with this later. But because you have no choice. And so it's not like when you're driving cross country, you don't have the option to, you know, really to put $10 in. You just have to fill it up and you take the big gulp.
Good point.
But it is insane. It is insane.
All right. I want to start off today's show by, this is really not surprising, by the way, because we know Dr. Kelly is right on pretty much everything we've ever talked about. And there was a few folks, I think, even early on when Dr. Kelly, you were talking about this particular subject, that sort of doubted maybe where we were coming from and not realizing whether we were going to be right or not. But there's a new study now confirming COVID vaccine causes severe autoimmune hepatitis. And that has actually been published after the WHO, I'll say it right, WHO issued a global alert about new severe hepatitis among children. So you had said that, you know, early on that you thought that was possibly what was going on. Nobody would claim that until just really this last week.
Exactly. And I think it was undeniable, frankly, as I've said for many, many months now. It's not just hepatitis. It's not just myocarditis. It's not just pericarditis. We're having a massive increase in what I call the itises.
Right.
Itis, as I've said, it is the word, you know, the suffix itis, I-T-I-S, at the end of a word in medicine simply means inflammation. So you can have tonsillitis, appendicitis, pericarditis. That means inflammation. Frequently, that inflammation is the result of infection,
okay,
such as in the case of tonsillitis, for example.
Okay.
But it can also be caused by other things. Inflammation isn't always a result of infection. And in the case of these vaccine-induced issues, it seems to be an autoimmune response. So we started seeing it initially with myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle. Then it was pericarditis, inflammation of the lining around the heart. We've seen incredible increases in tinnitus. It was inflammation of the nerve that goes to the ear that causes ringing in the ears. We have neuritis, which, you know, inflammation of the nerve that causes Bell's palsy. And now we are seeing hepatitis, inflammation of liver cells causing a very, very worrisome inflammation of the liver that can end up, you know, putting people on the liver transplant list. These are all related to the vaccines, and this was a concern from the very beginning that the spike protein that the vaccines induced you to produce had this effect, and it's now undeniable. And unfortunately, John, so many people who were compelled, coerced, or mandated to get the vaccines didn't really need the vaccine in the first place, either because they were at really relatively low risk from the virus itself, or because they'd already had the virus and recovered and had natural immunity. So all of these things that I'm saying don't make me anti-vaccine. They make me pro-science and pro-safety. We don't vaccinate people for chickenpox when they've already had chickenpox. We don't vaccinate people for things that they've already had and recovered from. So my viewpoint from the very beginning was that given the huge unknowns about these vaccines, they still, as of today, as of, you know, June 2nd, 2022, these vaccines remain experimental.
Right.
They are not FDA approved. They haven't been through anywhere near the kind of testing that you would need. And we don't have anywhere near the kind of long-term safety data we would need for anyone to say with any degree of certainty or confidence that these things are safe. We just don't know. And lo and behold, now we are finding out that there is a significant concern about cases of not only myocarditis and pericarditis, but now hepatitis related to the vaccine.
Interesting. I was just taking a few notes, too, while you were talking about that. And I've got some things that have been texted in as well. By the way, if you've got a question for Dr. Kelly on anything, doesn't even have to be related to COVID. Could just be, you know, things even that have happened, you know, just even recently with, you know, some of the shootings and other things. If you've got any kind of questions, comments that you want Dr. Kelly to comment on, please let us know. 307-200-8222. So, and maybe I make sure I word this correctly, because I'm not a doctor. You know that, Dr. Kelly. I mean, I talk to a lot. I interview a lot. I've been around a lot. You know, I've learned a lot even through this program that I've done now for the past 8 years, and feel like I'm a lot more knowledgeable today than I was 8 years ago. But I'm not a doctor. But I do know that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but does not cancer come from inflammation? Because one of the first things that they do when somebody ends up with cancer is they take them off of any type of food, anything in their diet that would actually promote inflammation. Am I wrong in thinking that if these vaccines cause inflammation, are we going to have a larger cancer problem down the road?
Well, I think we're conflating two things. I think that we're going to see an uptick and a significant uptick in cancers related to these vaccines. Absolutely.
Okay.
But I don't think it's related specifically to inflammation.
Okay.
Here's the situation. We know, on top of everything else, John, that these vaccines are immunosuppressive. They suppress the normal immune response.
Okay.
It is exactly precisely why we are seeing that double and triple and quadruple vaccinated people are actually at higher risk for contracting COVID, because there's absolutely irrefutable evidence that it suppresses the immune response. The problem is that much of the immune system's job isn't simply to fight off viruses and bacteria. That's one of its jobs, but certainly not the only one. One of the major jobs of the immune system is to fight off cancer, because your immune system is supposed to recognize when a cell, a single cell, whether
right.
it's in the lung or the colon or the breast, turns cancerous, becomes malignant, mutates, and turns into something that could, if it replicates, could cause a tumor, could create a cancer. And normally, a normal, well-functioning immune system will wipe many of those cells out before they ever take hold and become a cancer. If your immune system is suppressed, if you aren't mounting the normal immune response, then when that cancerous cell comes along, whether it's in a lymph node or the colon or the breast or wherever else, it remains to be seen if your immune system will recognize it as a cancer cell and wipe it out, or whether it will turn a blind eye to it and instead you will develop cancer. We are seeing an awful lot of patients whose cancers had been in remission now all of a sudden rear their ugly heads again. We are seeing an increase in new onset cancers, a precipitous increase. And again, the U.S. American, the American insurance companies, U.S.-based insurance companies, are reporting not only an increase in certain, you know, things like cancers and myocarditis and pericarditis, but they are showing a huge increase in claims for disability overall. Hmm. The number of Americans over the age of 16 who have claimed disability since January of 2021 has been like a hockey stick increase.
Wow.
If you look at
I didn't know that.
It's Edward Dowd has been reporting on it quite a bit. If and normally year over year, in the same way that the incidence of certain conditions, heart attacks, strokes, blood clots to the lung, are really remarkably stable year over year normally. So having seen a huge increase in those numbers is worrisome. Same thing with disability. People claiming disability has been a massive increase since January of 2021. And although I certainly can't say that all of those are related to vaccines, we sure as heck need to be getting into the weeds and really dissecting that data and saying, what is causing it? To what do we attribute all of these new cases or new claims of disability?
And yet, and this came from a listener, and yet they are still trying to lower the age so that babies can be vaccinated along with children. They're still pushing the vaccine. This texter says, what is going on? And Dr. Kelly, I don't have an answer to that.
Well, it's absolutely criminal in my mind, because, as I said, not only do we not have safety data that would give us any confidence that these things could be given to children without ill effect, but we've known from the very, very beginning that the people least likely to become significantly ill with COVID are healthy people under the age of 18. We have had a handful in the entire duration of the pandemic, a handful of kids who became significantly ill with it, and they were all kids who had serious underlying health conditions. So the idea that you would immunize a healthy five-year-old, let alone a healthy six-month-old, for COVID is absolute insanity. But I'll tell you what's going on. What's going on is they, meaning the vaccine manufacturers, are desperate to get the vaccines on the childhood vaccination schedule, because if they are successful in doing that, getting it on the same schedule as, you know, chickenpox, measles, mumps, rubella, you know, all the normal childhood vaccines, the drug manufacturers will be covered with blanket liability protection under the Childhood Vaccine Injury Act that was passed back in 1986. So in order to encourage manufacturers to actually create vaccines for kids, they were given blanket immunity against liability protection if somebody has a bad outcome. So all these vaccine manufacturers need to do, Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, is get their dang COVID vaccines on the childhood vaccine schedule, and they are then protected in perpetuity from liability for the millions and millions and millions of injuries that have occurred and will occur from these COVID vaccines.
All right, folks, keep asking questions. I got several more we'll ask as soon as we come back.
No liberal media bias here. This is Rush to Reason.
All right, we are back. It's our Thursday edition. The first hour, we always, typically, by the way, unless she's busy or out of town, have Dr. Kelly Victory on with us. And if you want to know more about Dr. Kelly, just go to our website, rushtoreason.com. There's an entire page dedicated to her, the things she does, the links that we talk about. All of that is on there, so I won't waste any time going through all of that. We've got more listener questions, and keep asking, by the way, the text line 307-200-8222. So please ask Dr. Kelly what is actually the truth about the current seriousness of this particular strain of virus. Is it still very risky for those that are, quote, unvaccinated, unquote, and with comorbidities? What are your thoughts, Dr. Kelly?
At this point, honestly, we are seeing such mild illness from COVID that I really have a hard time telling anyone, even those who have comorbidities, that they should be overly concerned. Obviously, if you have underlying health conditions, something as simple as a common cold can be a big deal.
Sure.
Influenza can be a big deal. So I can't say there's nothing to worry about. But the reality is
But really quick, Dr. Kelly, nothing more than what you would normally worry about if you were that person anyways, right?
Precisely correct. That's exactly right. Yeah, I would go back to your pre-pandemic way of living in the world. If you have asthma or diabetes or obesity or hypertension, and you would normally have gotten on a plane or normally gone to Disney World with your kids or normally gone, then do those things. Because this virus has done precisely what we would have expected it to do.
Yep.
It mutated and became more contagious and less lethal, less virulent, less capable of inducing severe illness. So vaccinated or not, you can still get COVID. As I said, those who are vaccinated actually have a higher risk of contracting the virus.
Which really quick, by the way, for everybody listening, there's data out there now to back up what Dr. Kelly's talking about. And it's not just one source. There are all sorts of sources. Even with the liberal bias of Google and so on, Dr. Kelly, there are still multiple sources out there that will back up what you just said.
I mean, I've been saying it from the beginning because it's scientific fact, and then finally it gets to the point where it is so overwhelming, where the data are so overwhelming that even the liberal media and Google and those things have to post it.
Yep.
This is the reality. There is nothing that I put out there that isn't backed up with studies. Everything I've said, for example, about masks and the fact that they don't work, that they are actually, if anything, increase the risk of transmission. There are 168 published studies that I posted on our website to back that up. These aren't studies that I wrote. These are studies that are in peer-reviewed journals. So when it comes to talking about, you know, where we are with this, quote, pandemic, which is over, the virus is endemic, meaning it isn't going away. It's going to be out there for the long haul. But the reality is that the virus right now is causing very mild symptoms in virtually everyone. People who are vaccinated are, in fact, at higher risk of contracting it than those who are unvaccinated. But I think it's really high time that people go back about their business the way that they did pre-pandemic, which doesn't mean that you aren't at risk for contracting a virus. You are. They're out there.
That's right.
We really should be focusing. Helen Keller's the one who said that security is an illusion. There is no place that is free of any exposure. But I think we need, again, to be focusing on those things that are reasonable, which means take care of your health. Go out of your way to make sure that you're eating a healthy diet and getting regular exercise, adequate sleep, stress mitigation, supplementing those vitamins and things that we know actually improve your immune system.
Really quick, by the way, that's a really, I want to stop you for a second, Dr. Kelly. That is a question that came in. We might as well just answer it there. Somebody did ask, how long should we continue taking supplements that we've been taking during COVID, i.e. quercetin, zinc, B12, and so on? What are your thoughts there while we're on that subject?
I don't see any reason to stop. I don't see any reason to stop doing those things. They are simple. They are inexpensive. And as long as you're not doing some sort of crazy mega doses, you aren't at risk for getting into any trouble with them. Vitamin D, you can technically, theoretically, become toxic on if you take massive mega doses every day. But now that we are through the pandemic, I think people should continue to supplement those things. We know vitamin D deficiency is so common in the United States. Upwards of 80% of blacks are vitamin D deficient, 50% of Latinos are, and more than 30% of Caucasians are vitamin D deficient, even in the summertime when we're spending more time outside. So I don't see any reason why you would stop supplementing those things. Zinc and quercetin, zinc isn't important just for COVID. Zinc enhances your ability to fight off all kinds of viruses and bacteria.
Right.
It's good for your immune system. So, many people have noted that they haven't had as many colds. They haven't had as many sinus infections. And that is largely, I think, because people have paid more attention to things like supplementing vitamin D and zinc.
Makes sense. Next one, this sort of goes back to what we were talking about prior to the break, but this came in. Dr. Kelly, I only took the first two shots of the vaccine, but now I seem to get severe colds, worse than I ever did in my previous history of life. Could this be the vaccine? I did not catch COVID.
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't say that it definitely is, but I can tell you that what that person is writing is what we are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Many people are experiencing that. Yes, I have seen people sicker than I've ever seen them with non-COVID types of upper respiratory infections, sinusitis, really bad colds, really bad upper respiratory illnesses. That are not COVID, and it's almost entirely in the vaccinated population. And as I said, we believe it's because of this this immune suppressive effect of the vaccines that is putting people where you would normally mount an immune response and not even get sick with that cold or whatever it is. Instead, people are getting not only sick, but really feeling crummy. I'm not saying getting hospitalized, but they are really down for the count for 10 days or 2 weeks.
Okay, next one. Was sick in February of 2021, so a little over a year ago. Got over it. Don't know if it was COVID. Then had a stroke November 28th of 2021. Spent 3 days in the hospital. Recovered quickly, but the doctors were puzzled by the presence of clots in my legs, lungs, and so on. No hole in my heart. Is there any evidence that COVID can cause clotting. I tested negative while in the hospital. I am unvaccinated, 64-year-old, healthy, active male, taking blood thinners now and have no further problems. I know that one's a tough one because it's not really your patient, but what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I'm not speaking to this individual. To answer the question, is there any evidence that COVID can cause blood clots? Absolutely. We know that the spike protein it itself is toxic. So the spike protein that exists on the outside of COVID can cause, you know, myocarditis and
which is why the vaccines are doing the same thing, right? Because essentially you're making your body do that, right?
Precisely correct. Okay. The difference is, you know, when you get the virus, you normally would wipe it out in a matter of days, and you would wipe out all of those spike proteins as well. Because the only reason you have the spike protein when you get COVID is because you've got the virus in your body. And as soon as you wipe the virus out, the spike proteins go away. That is very different from getting vaccinated. When you get vaccinated, you are giving yourself the roadmap, the blueprint, the instruction manual to make spike proteins and to keep making them. We have no idea when that stops. We don't have any idea when it stops. The manufacturers, they don't know. Make them for a week. It might be 6 months. It might be 5 years. They don't know how long you will continue to make spike proteins. That's the problem. Yes, the spike protein absolutely is toxic by itself and can cause all of these ill effects. So anybody who had, you know, when you have COVID, you could develop those blood clots or myocarditis or pericarditis or hepatitis. The good news is when you've got COVID, you eradicate that virus very, very quickly over a matter of days. When you get vaccinated, you start creating spike proteins and there's no off switch. And we were told early on that the vaccine would stay pretty much in your arm.
Right.
And you would
right.
just make the spike protein.
Right.
Well, it turns out that wasn't true at all. The spike protein, the mRNA went everywhere, and it went everywhere within a matter of hours. We were able to locate it in the colon, in the kidney, in the heart, in the brain, in the lungs. And concerningly, 11% of it went to the reproductive organs, namely the ovaries and the testicles, which is why there's
wow.
concern about fertility
yep.
impact.
Yep.
So, yes, the spike protein from the virus can cause these things. The difference is you wipe it out quickly, and that's not the case when you have spike protein from the vaccine.
All right, more questions that have come in. Again, text line 307-200-8222. This sort of goes along with the vitamin question. I'm taking ivermectin once a week. Is it worth continuing as an immune, keep your immune system up, in other words?
Yeah, I am not a proponent of continuing to take a prophylactic medicine at this point. I certainly think that was a reasonable thing to do at the height of the pandemic. Both hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin could be used in that way as a prophylactic. Given how mild the virus is at this point, I wouldn't recommend that you just for the rest of your life, you know, in perpetuity, mm-hmm. take a suppressive drug like that. So I would stop taking the ivermectin. I'd stop taking hydroxychloroquine if you were doing it for prophylaxis and, you know, pay more attention to those things like vitamin D, zinc, quercetin, and then good health habits with regard to controlling or maintaining the health of your immune system.
All right, more questions coming in. Again, 307-200-8222. Appreciate all the questions, by the way. I'll get a couple more in here before we take our next break. This comes from Jersey Joe, who listens all the time. Does Dr. Kelly have a comment on the 47% decline in COVID deaths in the 6 weeks since the airline mask mandate was overturned? And by the way, President Joe Biden, not Jersey Joe, but President Joe Biden is doing his best to get that reinstated, Dr. Kelly, which I don't understand. There's no science backing up why the feds would want to have masks back on airplanes or in the school system or anywhere else for that matter. Why are they dead set on that?
There is absolutely not a shred of science behind wearing masks at all for this respiratory virus. We know that masks do little, if anything, to stop the spread of respiratory viruses. In many cases, they actually made transmission worse. We know that from a multitude of studies, including the most recent one out of Catalonia, where they looked at kids who had to wear masks in school. compared to kids who didn't wear masks in school, and they found out that the kids who wore the masks had higher rates of transmission. Yes, I think when you're wearing them on airplanes, it probably enhances or increases the transmission because people fiddle with the masks.
Yep, dinking around with them all the time.
They put them on, they put them off, they put them on. They do exactly the one thing that we teach medical students and surgeons in training. The one thing you never do is once you put the mask on, don't touch it.
Yeah, don't fuss with it, right?
For the duration, the duration of this pandemic, it's on, it's off, it's over your ear, it's down under your chin.
It's hanging from the rearview mirror. It's hanging everywhere, Dr. Kelly. I mean, again, that was my biggest complaint on the whole mask thing. It's just the way they were all handled. I'm like, you guys are relying on something that you're treating like a sweatshirt.
Exactly. So there's not a shred of science, and there never was. I think that the reason they are going through this of trying to re-implement them on a plane, I think it's a principle issue. They are trying to make the point, and Anthony Fauci is leading the charge of it, that this is a public health decision and should have been left in the hands of public health people, not the courts. So he's just mad because he lost. He's doing his best to be Amber Heard right now. He's just pissed because he lost.
Yep.
And the court overturned it and took away his power there.
His passy went away. He wants it back.
Exactly. This thing, you might as well thread a clove of garlic around your neck and wear it because it has as much chance of warding off the evil spirits as the mask does.
Yep.
The mask, in my mind, truly is nothing more than a talisman. It is a symbol of something. It is not a meaningful way to stop the spread of respiratory viruses. It's certainly not why I, as a physician, wear a mask at the times when I wear masks. It's certainly not, why a surgeon's ever wore masks. So this is really a symbolic issue.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with science.
All right, great question, by the way. It's coming from one of my family members. As I understand it, if you're around someone shedding the vaccine, you can get COVID. Is that true or not? And that one I don't have an answer to.
No, that is not correct. You can only catch a virus if you are exposed to the virus.
I think what they're really asking is, even if you've had the vaccine, if you've got COVID and you're shedding, someone else can still get COVID, right?
Yeah, are you saying if you're shedding virus?
Yeah, so I think what they're really, because it's not spelled out perfectly, but I believe what they're saying is if you've got the vaccine, but you also now have COVID and you're shedding, releasing COVID, if you would, from your own body, which is what happens, which you have.
Oh,
it's contagious. So it's very contagious at that point, just like it would be normally, right?
Okay. Yes. In other words, vaccinated people are just as capable of spreading
the
virus.
There we go.
Got it. Okay. If that's the question.
There we go.
There is nothing about being vaccinated. Once you catch the virus, you are just as capable. In fact, there's some evidence that vaccinated people are more likely to spread the virus than unvaccinated because if you believe that the vaccine is successful at decreasing the severity of your symptoms, then it's vaccinated people who get COVID aren't likely to feel as lousy as unvaccinated people.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones who are out and about not realizing that they have COVID, and they're absolutely capable of spreading it.
Okay.
So there's nothing about being vaccinated that prohibits you from spreading COVID if you've got it.
All right, we got more questions coming in. 307-200-8222. We'll be right back as a brief time out here. It is Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly Victory with me this hour, which she typically is on Thursdays. We appreciate her joining us. And this is an easy question. I think I know the answer, but I want you to answer it instead, Dr. Kelly. Does summertime use of sunscreen and the fact that it's in a lot of the products even that folks use, makeup and so on, does that block the natural absorption of vitamin D? And is that why we have less of it in our bodies now than we used to?
Absolutely. And so from a public health perspective, we've done such a good job of educating people about, sun damage.
Almost too good of a job, right?
Well, you know, it's easy to supplement vitamin D. So, you know, it's not easy to undo melanoma or skin cancer. So you're better off to avoid the ill effects of the sun with regard to developing skin cancer. You know, we still have a big problem with melanoma in this country. So, yes, using all of these sun protection products, and as you point out, you're correct, you know, women's cosmetics, for example, even if you didn't want it,
yep,
if you buy foundation or you
yep
buy moisturizer, and everything comes with SPF, you know, 30 in it. So you've got sun protection factor 30, whether you wanted it or not, and we apply it liberally, and as we should. But as a result, we are decreasing, therefore, the amount of vitamin D that we're getting naturally. Then on top of it, you know, between smog and pollution, those things actually cut down, believe it or not, on the amount of, you know, rays that make it through to you to develop vitamin D. We don't get enough in our diets, even with vitamin D fortified milk and bread and grain products. You're hard pressed, particularly as people have become more sort of paleo, they've
right
gone away from
right
eating those fortified starches.
That's right.
Not necessarily a bad thing, because we, for a while, were way, way, way too carboholic. You know, we were eating everything carb. But all of those things end up sort of exacerbating the underlying vitamin D deficiency. The good news is, as I said, vitamin D is so easy to replenish or to take as a supplement, and you can do it in the form of, you know, gummies or whatever else, or a, you know, multivitamin, and I recommend it. But yes, it's our adherence to avoidance products that has probably
not to get off on a tangent here, but I also think with our higher lifestyle, the fact that, you know, more people are wealthy today than they've ever been, and I know a lot of folks out there would deny that, but we are, even as a whole world population, we're doing better now than we were even 30, 40 years ago. And where I'm going with this, Dr. Kelly, is in turn, we have more shade. We've got the ability to buy awnings and umbrellas and all sorts of things that actually, even if we're outside, still keep us out of the sun, if you would, where, by the way, when I was a kid, we didn't have those things.
Exactly. All of these things contribute. And so I think that, you know, we've seen over time, and we're more attuned now to the idea of that there are optimal vitamin D levels.
True.
You might not be in a situation where your vitamin D level is low enough that you're having a bone problem, but we now know that vitamin D deficiency is strongly related to certain cancers. It's undoubtedly why the black population, for example, has a higher incidence of colon cancers. That is related to underlying vitamin D deficiency.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We
okay
didn't know that before. Hmm. We didn't realize the association between vitamin D, for example, and the immune system.
Hmm.
So, you know, everybody knows you can develop rickets, you know, you can develop a bone problem, but if you're that vitamin D deficient, you know, you are way off the off the spectrum in terms of vitamin D deficiency. So what we used to consider, quote, adequate or normal vitamin D levels to avoid bone issues, to avoid brittle bones or bending of bones, isn't enough to help you avoid things like the development of certain cancers,
yep,
specifically colon and prostate and breast cancers, or to make sure that your immune system is functioning at peak performance.
Charlie, I wanted to add one more thing to my list, too. Spray tans. That's another thing that we have now that we didn't used to have back in the day.
Exactly.
That's good. All right. Hey, one more question, or not one more, but another question. And by the way, keep these coming in, folks. 307-200-8222. This is a great question, and I frankly, I do not know the answer to this. Is there any companies or individuals doing any work on countering the potential long-term side effects of the vaccines, the treatments, and so on? And I don't know of any, Dr. Kelly.
Well, you've got groups like, you know, Frontline COVID Care Coalition, and, you know, those of us who are on early COVID care, mywebsite.org, people are looking at protocols really to treat the long-term effects. Many of them, interestingly, are similar to the treatment for the virus itself. There are things that include, steroids to help counteract the inflammation. There are antihistamines. Ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine have been used, fluvoxamine. There are lots of medications that are in what I would call the cocktail used to treat some of the long the effects of the long-term vaccine effects are very similar to treating some of the things we're using to treat long COVID. So yes, there are people working on it. Again, it's been largely suppressed by the mainstream media because they, you can't talk about treating vaccine injury if you're not willing to talk about vaccine injury.
That's right.
You got to talk about the ill effects of the vaccines. And the reality is that we have seen a large number of people who have been injured by the vaccines, but it's, you're hard-pressed to get anyone in the mainstream media, and frankly, even any physicians, to acknowledge it.
Goes to the next question. Somebody said they just tuned in, want to know where to go to find stats on how children have been ill affected by the vaccine, how many have died. This particular person says, my friend gave her 8 and 11-year-old their first shot. Is there any way those damaged kids can get compensation in any form from the pharmaceutical companies either now or down the road if they've got any ill effects?
There's absolutely zero recourse. until or unless some of the lawsuits which have been levied now against the FDA and against the NIH and against the vaccine manufacturers, if they are able to determine, and Edward Dowd has been a big promoter of this, if they are able to determine, for example, that Pfizer committed fraud, that they lied, that they buried data that they had when they submitted it to the FDA, if it can be proved that the FDA turned a blind eye to data that they had, and such that there is actual fraud was perpetrated, and there's no question in my mind that it was, mm-hmm. but it would need to be proven in a court of law.
Right.
If it were able to be proven in a court of law, then all liability protection, those liability blankets go away. And yes, there would be absolutely recourse. As it stands right now, however, given number one, that the vaccines are protected by being under the EUA, the Emergency Use Authorization, and number two, once they're able to successfully get on the childhood vaccine schedule, then all bets are off. And then the answer is no. There is no recourse.
Right.
And this is a real problem. Right now, as I said, you're hard-pressed to get people to even acknowledge that something is a vaccine injury. So trying to get hold of that data is very, very difficult. The Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System is woefully underestimated. You know, the estimates by Harvard is that collects somewhere between 1 and 10% of all actual vaccine injuries. I think it may be even less than that when it comes to COVID because of this overwhelming disincentive for physicians to report. I mean, physicians have been threatened. They've been threatened with sanctions, with losing their licenses. It has been absolutely awful if you even dare to question the safety of the vaccines, let alone come out and say, hey, I've seen a bunch of patients that have been injured by it, or I'm not recommending it. You know, you're being threatened with losing your medical license for daring to give informed consent to a patient. If you tell your patient the God's truth, which is, we don't know if this is safe. We don't know.
Right, right.
It isn't out there. I mean, and for anyone to say anything other than that is a bold-faced lie.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have more than 12 months' worth of safety data. That's a reality. But if you tell your patient that, which is the definition of informed consent, or you tell your patient, look, you're in a really low-risk category, so I don't think you necessarily need to take this vaccine right now anyway. You have time to wait until we get safety data. That is the definition of informed consent. Yet physicians are being threatened that if you give that informed consent, you can lose your medical license.
Unreal. Unreal. I have a personal question, and I know I probably know the answer, but I guess just to vent a little bit, because I still don't understand this. This is like the mask end of things. We've got a policy, I guess. It comes from the CDC on travel, where if you want to come across the border illegally down south, this doesn't apply. But Kelly, if you or I Steve, Charlie, any of us travel out of the country, go someplace, Mexico, we want to come back, we have to have either proof of vaccine, which we've already been talking about, which I would not have, or you have to have a negative COVID test to re-enter the country. We've already determined through the last 45 minutes of chatting that really COVID is on not only a downhill slide, it's becoming nothing more than a common cold. Why do we still have policies like this to where we've got to inconvenience our own citizens? These are not foreigners, but our own citizens. When they leave the country and want to come back, they have to have a negative COVID test. Yet, we've got illegals crossing the border, hundreds of thousands of them, by the way, on a monthly basis. Why are we still doing this?
It's insanity, John, but I hate to break it to you. It's not just about leaving the country. I spend, you know, half of my life in the great state of the People's Republic of California, where in order to get into certain venues in places like San Francisco, you not only have to show that you've been vaccinated and boosted, but in some places you have to show a negative COVID test.
Oh, geez.
This is to travel within a city. It absolutely defies logic. It defies science. It is absolutely predicated on 2+ years of propaganda and fear-mongering on the part of our public health officials. And the reason I think this is so dangerous, in addition to the unbelievable toll it has exacted not only on our economy, but on the psyche of millions and millions and millions of Americans, but God help us when we, next time you want the public to listen to you, when you sound the alarm about the next public health crisis, and there will be one, I promise. I can't tell you what it will be, but there will be a crisis. There will be an outbreak of something, or something that we, where we really need people to heed the warnings and the advice of public health officials, and no one's going to do it because this has been such a debacle. People are so used to the CDC and the FDA and the NIH and Anthony Fauci and, you know, Gali and all of them marching out and saying things that are absolutely clearly not based in science. Clearly, it's rules for thee, but not for me.
That's right.
You know, you see over and over and over again, our politicians and public health officials tell you to do one thing, then they do something else. And you know darn well that if they actually believed that what they are saying to you, you wouldn't find them, you know, in a public setting or outing at a sporting event or at a, you know, award ceremony or whatever it is without a mask on themselves. The issue is they know it's not. They know it's not reality. They know it's not scientific. They just love the control that it gives them. And maintaining those emergency powers puts them continually in a position where they can, you know, exact a lot of control over the population. And that's really fundamentally, as I said, you mark my words, it's June now, but I promise you that there will be some new Greek alphabet, you know, some new variant of COVID that's going to come along, let's say, I'm guessing second week of October, no, earlier than that, second week of September, because it needs to be in time that they can start raising the flag about why we have to have mail-in ballots.
That's right. That's right. I'll leave it at that, Dr. Kelly.
To the voting box.
This is, and again, we'll continue next week, folks. Questions, keep texting them to us. I appreciate it. Dr. Kelly, appreciate you so much. Have a great rest of your day, and you're the best. We really appreciate it.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. I just asked Charlie a moment ago, why does this hour with Dr. Kelly always go by so stinking fast? It does. And many of you texting in how much you really appreciate her and how blessed we are to have her. And yes, we are. We are super blessed. I cannot say enough about her and the time that she takes out of her week to be with us. I just texted her that as well and said thank you, not only on my behalf, but all of yours as well, because I know you all text that and really mean it. And we are really, as a station and as a program, very, very blessed to have her knowledge with us on a routine basis. So I appreciate that. This is John Rush from Rush to Reason and Drive Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Check out more of our podcasts at rushtoreason.com or drive-radio.com.